This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you by the International Brotherhood of Magicians annual 2024 convention in Tacoma, Washington. That's going to be coming up just right around the corner, not too long from now, July the 10th through the 13th. You'll get more information about that on the convention guide page. If you just go to themagicwordpodcast.com and click on the convention guide, you'll see all the conventions I'm aware of that are happening around the world. If yours is not listed, please notify me. Just send me an email to scott@themagicwordpodcast.com, and I'd be glad to give you a free listing over there, so this way other people can find out about your convention then as well. But for more information on the IBM convention, be sure to stick around, because in the middle of this podcast episode we have coming up here, we'll have a short conversation with Benjamin Barnes, who is the talent director for the IBM convention this year. Well, as to this week's episode, I'm very excited to actually have had a chance to sit down with a longtime friend of mine, Mr. Giovanni Lavera. Gio has been a professional magician for a very long time and had moved into speaking quite some years ago and found that to be quite a lucrative career for him then as well. But he still maintains his passion for magic. And I'd love speaking with him, because Gio is just a larger-than-life individual. You can tell just by his laughter, his joy, and just if you are around him at all, you are kind of pulled into this gravitational force of this joyful man that lives every moment to the fullest, which is kind of the point of his book about Live a Thousand Years, which, by the way, if you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there you'll see a link where you can go and order a book from Amazon. I think it's about $5, so it's not very much. I bought this book many years ago, and it's a really motivational book, which I would recommend, and I know that you would enjoy. And it's a fairly quick read, but it's something also that you will probably want to buy maybe extra copies to pass on to friends then as well. But we talk a little bit about that here in this podcast, along with so many other things then as well. That includes just a lot of tips, a lot of advice, and some reminiscing about some things that you may not have been aware of. For an example, do you know that he was one of the people who had developed the T-shirt cannon? Yeah, in case you're wondering even what that is, if you don't know what it is, we talk about that then too. I'm not going to spoil this. I'm going to let this unfold and let this be kind of a surprise for you, almost as if that it's magic, because certainly he, that is Gio, embodies magic. He's just a great guy. He's got a lot of good books that are out there. He and John Rockerbauer put together a book some time ago. I think it was called The Amazing Cigar. Had a bunch of tricks you could do with cigars. And he has, again, not been someone who is often seen at magic conventions. I happened to catch him when he was performing actually at the Magic Castle here just recently, and I'm glad we did. We haven't had a chance to catch up for quite some years, and it was just like old home week. So please welcome my guest this week, Mr. Giovanni Lavera, here on The Magic Word.
We are now at the Magic Castle, actually at the Nirvana, which is the place where a lot of the people who are performers are put up for the week while they're out here working. And I had an opportunity to meet up with one of my longtime friends. And this is so cool, so cool. I can't express how great this is to get together again with him, because when we first got to be friends, we were kind of in a forced situation due to a blizzard snowstorm in Gatlinburg, Tennessee.
Oh my God, you remember that? Wasn't that an incredible?
That was an awesome, that was a winter carnival. And boy, was it winter. And they had to go an extra day.
Yeah.
And
we had to put together a whole extra day of the convention.
That's right.
Lectures and shows. And that was one for the record books, really. That was a good one.
And so that is one that comes to my mind when you ask about what conventions earlier before we started talking. Anyhow, so the voice you're hearing over there is Giovanni Lavera. And Gio also, not only is magician, and I think were you the first to win the gold cups? Or you
he won the gold cups. Eight gold cup champions.
One of the very few gold cup winners. And I was one of the judges at that, in fact.
We're not,
yes,
no
I was.
Kidding.
And Mike Close, I remember we were talking about that. It was great. And I thought that, yeah, it's definitely a Gold Cup mature. Well, we gave you first prize, and actually it was another group, I think, that decided who was the Gold Cup, you know, kind of a thing. Anyhow, aside from that.
That was 1991.
Ah, 91.
Back in Baltimore.
Where were we? Baltimore.
Yeah.
Okay. And since then, so you may not have seen or heard him because he's not attending a lot of magic conventions because he's gone off in a different direction, actually, as a keynote speaker and doing amazing work with the National Speakers Association and has been doing that for a long number of years and has put together some amazing books. I got a copy of your first book that was the, what was that, Travels Around the World or kind of the brown cover?
Live a Thousand Years. Yeah.
Boy, do I recommend that book. It is great. And I haven't got the others, but I'm sure they're equally as inspirational as well. Anyhow, you can go do some work on Geo. He also has got a great place that I've not yet visited that was custom made by Kerry Pollack with some really cool things. Actually, if you go back to the conversation we had with Kerry in the archives, you can listen to him because we talk about Geo and his house and some of the little Pepe, the little mouse, you know.
Pepino.
Anyhow, yes. I'm getting deep in the woods over here. Let's welcome my guest, please, Giovanni Levera, better known to me as Gio. Hey, Gio.
Hey, Scott. What a joy to be with you, Scott.
That was what your tagline was when you won the Gold Cup. Hey!
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And you produced a giant A.
The giant letter A, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And what I remember about that was what kind of some of the controversy was that of saying that really wasn't close-up because you can't carry around an A. And you said, you do that at restaurants. You do this stuff, and it can be big. I mean, it looked more like a parlor act to some, but it was a close-up act, and it was great.
Yeah, you know, it was all close-up. Okay, it was all very working material, you know, that I used to do in restaurants and whatnot, and still most all the routines I did in the Gold Cups are part of my working repertoire today.
Mm-hmm.
But I framed it, right? You have to, any performer has to adjust to your performance situation.
That's true.
Okay, so if you want it to be close up, then stage it like close up. Mm-hmm. Here it's close up, it's Coliseum close up.
That's
what I call it.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I call it Coliseum close up.
Yeah.
Close up for 150 of your best friends. Okay, you better, you know, you have to stand out. So I did frame it in a way for that competition.
Mm-hmm. And going in there, you always have such a positive outlook on life and everything in general. And did you have that as a goal, saying, I don't only want to win first prize, but I'm going for gold?
Well, you know, if you're going to compete, okay, compete to win. Okay, don't mess around because you don't want to waste the opportunity. I mean, that's one of the great, let's say, blessings of competition is that it raises the bar for each magician, hopefully. I mean, that's really the goal is to, you know, to maybe we'll find some new magic stars. Maybe we'll, you know, we'll make some discoveries there. But I think the real goal is to lift the art. It gives us an opportunity to compete. And if you compete to win, then it causes you to do something that you normally wouldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
You say, geez, if I'm going to compete to win, if I do my normal stuff, everybody knows this. Hey, I got to think of something. Boy, I really got to fool these guys. What am I going to do? Now, all of a sudden, our magician is thinking bigger about their act.
Yeah.
You know, they're getting creative. And that's the whole point.
Oh, I see.
They're getting better.
Yeah.
Now, even whether you win or not, if you improved, if you go to compete to win and you improved your act, you won.
That's true. Even if you don't get the trophy.
That's right.
Because, you're going to be a better performer.
Yeah.
And you can compete then again if you wish, you know. Yeah. But I think you just need to look at that as a positive thing that you
Lift your own art. You know, that's the whole point. You know, and sometimes we need a kick in the pants. We need a good reason to do it. You know, how many times I say, we have another show. And you do what you know works.
Right.
But if you're going to go to a magic competition and you're going to be surrounded by your peers, what normally works for you may not work there. So now all of a sudden, you got to work harder. That's a good thing.
Yep. Now, I mentioned also that you've been away from magic conventions at least for a long time, but I know magic has always been near and dear to your heart forever.
Magic is, Scott, make no mistake, magic is a through line through all of my work.
Mm-hmm.
I've never left the art of magic. It's always there. This is my 50th year as a magician.
Wow.
I have
My grandmother bought me a magic kit, like many of us, mm-hmm. started very young. Mm-hmm. And at the age of 7, that was it. I knew.
Yeah.
And by the time I was 12, I was doing, I got my first corporate dollars from Disney. Yeah. You know, by the time I was 12 years old, I was doing a church picnic, you know, and there was someone from Disney Entertainment.
Yeah.
Went to our church at the time, right? Okay. And they said, hey, kid, you're pretty good, you know? And they have these ballroom conventions at the hotels. And of course, in Orlando, families are going to come. They're going to bring their kids.
That's right.
So what do you do with the kids when the adults are at the, you know, the awards night? They create a separate track for them.
Oh.
They play Disney movies. And right? Yeah. Well, there I was, you know, doing my little magic act. And I had a flea circus.
Did you really?
I built it. Built it. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
My scout master had a workshop. I built a little flea circus, and I did that for those meetings back then. But you know, being in Orlando was fertile ground, mm-hmm. Not only for creativity, right? I mean, we're surrounded by Disney and NASA, right. and
there are a lot of magicians in Orlando for that reason. I think because that is kind of an like outside of Las Vegas. I think of Orlando as a Disney an entertainment capital because of Disney and Universal and everything that's there.
Oh, it's such an important part of our American culture, mm-hmm. right? You know, we need to be entertained and have our fun with our families.
But that's that you hit on right there, families, because whereas Las Vegas is really more for adults, this is really for the entire family, which I think reaches a larger audience.
Well, actually. Then you got the convention business, right?
So that's true too.
It always goes back and forth between Vegas and Orlando, who's the number one city. And mm-hmm. my mom had a good vision. We were in Bricktown, New Jersey. And when Disney had opened, Walt had announced Epcot, Experimental Prototype Community of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
And mom thought we were going to live in the Dome City, this utopian state.
Okay.
You know, and we moved to Orlando and we picked out we got to our house, our brand new house, and put the mattresses in the room, and the next day we're supposed to unpack the movie truck, and mom says, nope, we're going to Disney. That set the tone for my life, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Seeing the Haunted Mansion, right, that was one of let's say there was a lot of influencers, okay, that kind of pushed me in the direction of amazement.
But seeing the Pepper's Ghost and all that stuff was happening, that was changing.
No, that was my first experiments with deception as entertainment. What my grandmother, there she was again. She was influential. She bought me the record of the Haunted Mansion sound effect. Right, you know, with the lightning.
Yeah.
And I tied strings in my bedroom, right? I had a string on the dresser drawer, and I had a string running through all the books. Okay, so the books would all come out when you pulled the string, and a string that had a ghost that would slide down on a wire, and they were all tied to different colored tube socks. Okay, behind my bed, the red one did this, the green one did that. Okay, and I called my sister. I put that record on. And I, Michelle. Oh, geez, trying to scare me. You know, that was my very first, let's say, I was the man behind the curtain.
Behind the
curtain. You know.
Yeah, you were the wizard. Yeah. Wow, the Geo of Oz. So that was inspirational, I'm sure, a lot of things that you did at that time. And how much fun would that be to scare yourself? I'm just imagining that. So that's kind of led then to a lot of things as far as your interest in, I was wanting to go to the house that I was going to say that Carrie built, I guess.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, no, it's like Carrie. Well, okay, it's the house that Gio built.
Yeah, Gio built.
Carrie, what a joy. He's such a dear friend of mine.
But was it something like that went back to your roots of thinking about the Haunted Mansion and that thing that you kind of wanted to have this house? As I recall, it was something like for corporate parties. You can say, okay, we can come in and you're going to rent the place out, right?
Well, you know, no, it was always a fantasy. You know, I was going to be an architect if I wasn't going to be a magician school. Right. I always loved the idea of, you know, seeing the invisible.
Yeah.
Okay. I've always had that ability. And most magicians really do. We're creative people. Mm-hmm. People say think outside the box. Heck, we live outside the box. Okay. So, but studying architecture, I always loved the idea of spaces. Okay. And I was always able to transfer my ideas to paper. And that was a big, you know, skill set when I learned drafting and architecture, you know, back in school, mm-hmm. that I would use really for the rest of my life in creativity and inventing things. But, you know, I always had the dream of living on the lake, designing my own home. Okay. And when I got that opportunity to buy some lakefront property, and then, boy, I got to design my own house, right? And a lot of us magicians, you know, we dream of a magic castle, or we dream of our own
sliding
show,
doors and all that cool stuff.
You know. And of course, I love the Addams Family. I got to be Gomez, right? You know, really, in my own house with my cigar and walking around, you know. But it was, it's one thing to do it, but to share it. Okay, so I have 46 family members, Scott, within 30 minutes of my home. We're a big Italian family.
Yeah.
Okay. We're fertile, man. We don't watch TV very much.
You eat and sleep and propagate.
So the villa was an incredible project. Okay. It was a dream come true, and many, many dreams had come true there at the villa. I had my children. We raised my kid. You know, we raised our kids, and I was able to do a lot of entertaining there. I had seating for 50 in my little theater. Okay. It was a great training ground where I was coaching other magicians and speakers and performers, right?
Was that a class that you taught? I mean, or something they could sign up for? Just one-on-one mentoring or what?
Well, I would always get, all of the above.
Okay.
I've done all of the above, right? So I did WOW Camp, and that was more of a corporate.
You've forgotten WOW.
Yeah, WOW. Right, exactly.
Mom.
WOWmom.com.
Do you have that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that was my original domain name. Still have WOWmom.com. You know. There's a lot of things that have happened between me being a kid and then building that house, but that was a dream come true on all accounts, you know. And I got to share it, and that was the big thing. All the magicians passing through town, clients coming through, and my own family. You know, we beat the heck out of that thing. You know, we used it, you know, and shared it.
Yeah. And did they come up with some of the ideas also when you were asking them? I mean, they consult, if you will, on some of the magic effects that take place, or was that all you?
Who's that?
I'm talking about when you say your family came and used the house. I mean—
The family would come. We would have, we had the biggest parties there.
Yeah.
They would enjoy the magic and enjoy the nutty, you know, the little mouse in the door. The center island would unlock and roll into the pantry, and I had a mirror ball in the kitchen. The kitchen would turn into a dance floor.
Like a disco.
Yeah. We had a big party every year called Happy Noon Year. Noon Year. Okay. So, why do a countdown to the
midnight?
And but everybody is too damn tired. It was to drive. You're exhausted.
Yeah.
You know? So we do a countdown to noon on the next day, and everybody comes at around 11:30.
Good idea.
And, I would get a one-year-old, a two-year-old, a three-year-old, all the way up to a 10-year-old, and we would do a countdown, 10, 9, 8. And everybody would get a confetti launcher, and we'd blow the house up. I mean, the whole house was filled with confetti. It was We began the party with the finale, okay? And then we would go from there. And I would go around the house, you know, with a leaf blower at the end. Cleaned it all up.
Well, on New Year's Eve, did you ever, I assume that, I know that being an Italian family, you've told me before about all the cooking and everything, and so there's got to be some really great recipes and good food that...
Listen, we talk about magic secrets here. Don't talk to me about the recipes of my family and you want the secrets there, all right? I'm not giving you the secrets to my grandmother's tomato sauce.
Oh, that was kind
it's
of
not happening.
That's where I was going.
All right, I'll teach you the, you know, my latest miracle, but you're not getting the recipe.
You can show me a good double lift, but you're not going to tell me about the tomato
Forget
sauce.
It. Just get it out of your head.
Darn it. Well, sorry, listeners, I tried. I thought that, you know, every once in a while we get a recipe or a book recommendation or something, but we no recipes here. Darn it. I love Italian food, my favorite. But I'm sure, as I said, that you guys probably had some good food and everything. It's not just hamburgers and hot dogs.
Look at my resume, Scott. Look at this thing.
Yeah, you've been doing well there. Yeah. It looks like, as you said, a lot of stuff happened between then and, I mean,
stuff happened after too.
The haunted bedroom and then
lifetime.
That's right. That's true. Why did you go into speaking?
Yeah, it wasn't a choice.
Oh, really?
Right? I've heard people say,
well, that's, it pays better. You know, the people come in with a piece of paper and the other guys are bringing in a big trunk. It's like, oh, this guy, the paper's making more money, so I'd rather do that.
Well, I mean, that's one way of looking at it, but yeah. You know, it might be nice to have something to say. Right?
Good point.
It might be nice to have something to say.
Yeah.
You know, I won the Gold Cups in 91. Mm-hmm. And of course, I was the magician for the Orlando Magic during that time.
Well, I remember you and Tim Glancy.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. Because didn't he invent the t-shirt gun? You invented the t-shirt gun.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the two of us, we changed sports entertainment.
Okay. You did.
So at that time.
I don't know the people who are listening to this know about that background. That is an amazing story.
You know what? I tell you, it was quite something during those times. We were just riding on our passion for the art of magic. You know, I was a young buck coming up, okay, and I met Tim at Florida State Magic Convention. I was 18 years old, and I'm in the elevator, and I'm looking at Glancy going, dang, this guy's a real magician. Mm. Look at his hair. And
yeah,
his,
long hair.
His goatee. And then you hear him speak. He had such a musical voice, mm-hmm. You know. Oh, sometimes it has a tendency to just jump right up. You know, he had this little cute little voice. And boy, did he have some close-up chops. Man, his hands were incredible. And he was a real magician. And we became fast friends, okay, because we were both working restaurants. Tim was working the Villanova. And I would, you know, we would meet late night. I remember Georgette, our waitress at the Denny's, you know, after work, we both meet and we'd sit there till 3 o'clock in the morning. And I would reinvent everything that was in Tarbell. I go, look at this. And he'd go, yeah, Tarbell number 3. Look up page 72. And I'm like, ah, damn it. You know,
sounds like sounds like Denny Haney.
Yeah, right. Yeah, invent it again. Yeah.
That's what he put on his tombstone. It's in Tarbell.
Yeah, it's in Tarbell. So, but Tim and I became just great friends, and it was just through our passion for magic, and just we were creating and having fun, thinking about how to delight audiences.
Yeah, and how you can take it further. And yeah. So I remember when they decided to have an NBA team there, and it was called Magic,
and
you were trying to promote all that, and Shaquille O'Neal was getting out of high school. I don't think he went to college or something. I remember you got an autograph for my son with Shaquille.
Yeah.
For me.
Well, we actually made Shaquille appear. We came up with the coolest stunt. It was a basketball center court. Okay, this is the first time Shaquille is being introduced to Orlando.
Yeah.
Okay, Orlando had picked him. He comes to Orlando. All the fans came to see, you know, meet this new player.
Yeah.
We had a basketball center court on a base. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this thing would inflate to 8 feet in diameter.
Oh, my. Mm-hmm.
And then Shaq would rip out of it with streamer cannons and the whole thing. And, oh, man, it was awesome. And to work with Shaq, I mean, he was just, of course, that was his early years, but he's just a big teddy bear.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Shake his hand wraps around you. He's like a giant, you know. You know, I'd see him, you know, under the arena and say, gee, work me a miracle, you know. Yo, gee.
Well, I remember also the different kinds of things you did, like at halftime shows, like with basketballs, you did like a broomstick suspension with basketball.
Oh, you remember that?
It was
six basketballs all laid out straight,
mm-hmm.
and hypnotized one of the Magic girl dancers, right?
Yeah.
And she would lay down on the six basketballs straight. And then, you know, that's amazing to be balanced laying on basketballs.
Yeah.
But then we would remove one at a time and redistribute her weight by rolling her, okay, until there was just one ball left in the center. And then we'd pull her feet and it would roll all the way to the back of her neck. And then we'd pull her shoulders and it would roll all the way to her feet. You know? And that was, surrounded.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you were in the
middle of the basketball court.
Right,
yeah, at halftime.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, doing halftime shows, doing magic, you know, that was a natural. Okay.
Yeah.
And we did it really well, and we tied it into what we're doing close up magic in the sky boxes.
Sure.
But the real, let's say one of our big successes was, what do you do for the fans in the stands? And we were, you know, and it was, you know, try to do close-up magic up there. Oh, man, you're going to die.
Well, didn't they hit you with a camera or something? You were like on the big screen?
No, like all the time.
Yeah.
You know, it was until we came up with the hoop hat, which was
right.
The first one was a helmet, okay, with a backboard mounted to the top of the helmet, okay, and it had handlebars that stuck out the side, so the person who was wearing the helmet would have some control.
Right.
And we'd throw out balls to the audience, and the person standing in the middle of the aisle wearing this contraption, okay, became kind of our, you know, our living basketball hoop, and people were throwing balls to it. People went nuts. That was the first one.
Yeah.
Second season, we came up with Backpack Basketball, a high-tech backpack apparatus out of which a backboard springs up, mousetrap style, shoots up about 10 feet on two telescoping poles on a pulley system right off our back.
Yeah.
We could control the height. Right. So if you shot low, boom, the thing would go down low. It would go in, stream back in, and it would shoot out. The crowd would cheer and it'd be like, you know. But those, you know, those bits. And of course, you know, we were the first guys to launch T-shirts into the stands.
I know that.
And that became a worldwide phenomenon.
Did you franchise that? Do you own the patent to it?
We patented all our props. We franchised. Chicago Bulls was the first one. This Tim and Gio, we wanted you to franchise. I'm like, God bless America, you know. And so we expanded. We had, you know, we would audition 400 guys. Okay,
to be shooters, city. You mean?
We had a company called the Sports Magic Team.
Sports Magic Team, sure.
Sports Magic Team. And we worked with Curly Neal. I had him at my summer camp.
From the Harlem Globetrotters.
Sure. And as a kid, I watched him. And little did I know, I'd get to be friends with Curly. You know, and that guy could make the three-quarter court shot, 7 out of 10 shots, Scott. Wow. Mm-hmm. I was with him. Boom! You know, that thing would make it right out of the...
Yeah.
Right in the hole. I thought, man, we practice and do magic. Look at Curly here. I mean, he's...
Yeah, doing the real stuff there.
The real deal, you know. But I learned some basketball tricks and basketball handling from Curly and his wonderful wife, Rose, right? They were great. And it was neat to work with some of your heroes, you know, as a kid, Curly and Meadowlark Lemon. That was great entertainment.
Meadowlark Lemon.
Yeah. My first 45 record I bought was Sweet Georgia Brown.
Oh, Well, when you developed that canon, the T-shirt canon, was that kind of based upon a streamer? Because, you know, you used to use all the streamers, and you're thinking, hey, what else can we shoot out of there and try
No. How it worked was there's a big slingshot, okay, which is made of surgical tubing. And it's used for launching balloons. So the way the thought process went was like, how are we going to reach the fans in the stands? What are we going to do? Oh, I know. We'll shoot water balloons. Ah, ha, 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 ha. Well, you can't shoot water balloons. Maybe we could shoot a T-shirt.
Yeah.
Right? Because, of course, we're not going to shoot water balloons at a sporting event.
But you got to ball them up,
yeah. Yeah, so we came up with this method of rolling up the T-shirt nice and tight. Mm-hmm. And I think it's actually better entertainment than the cannon, okay, is because you got four guys, right? You got one guy holding the left side of the sling, one guy holding the right side of the sling.
Right.
You got one guy with a bag that has T-shirts in it, and you got the shooter.
That's pulling the thing
back. Just plays better. You know, you're talking about center court and arena.
Sure.
And then you don't see the tension out of an air gun.
That's
but when
point.
You pull
the slingshot.
Slingshot and you pull it back, you know, 8 or 10 feet, that's got tension.
Right.
And you got these, you know, these guys rotating around, that's gonna play the center court way better. You know?
Well, and another reason I would imagine you went that way now is I understand that there was one of the NBA players who was on the bench got hit with one of these things, you know, with a cannon one.
It's so funny. I gotta tell you this. So we did it for 5 years.
Yeah.
Okay, Tim and I. All right. And we toured every major team in the NBA. We did baseball, arena football, hockey.
Yeah.
We did the All-Star games.
And you had Jimmy Buffett. I remember seeing Tim Clancy at the Buffett concert.
That's right. So we were at the All-Star game. I get a tap on the shoulder. Okay. And he goes, I'm Jimmy Buffett's manager. He goes, Jimmy wants to talk to you. And he's like, what you guys are doing here is amazing. You know, we'd like to have this at our concert.
Yeah.
And that we were off to the races, 150 concerts with Buffett.
Yeah.
And we built a team there. And then it was after the 50 year, Tim and I had a parting of ways.
Yeah.
Okay. It was a very good friendship, very good business. But it was time for us to separate. We had some character things, some just
fair enough.
Different, you know, different ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And it was time to move on. And I had sold it to Tim.
And now for a quick message from our sponsor, the IBM Convention. The International Brotherhood of Magicians annual convention in 2024 is going to be in Tacoma, Washington, coming up on July the 10th through the 13th. And one of the things that makes the convention great is the talent. And we've got just a wonderful talent director this year in Benjamin Barnes, who also is the talent director then for the Chicago Magic Lounge. So he knows everybody and gets all the great people. And so, first of all, hello, Ben. How are you, man?
I am great. I'm excited about the convention. It's right around the corner, so I can't wait.
It sounds very exciting. Everything that I've been hearing about this, it sounds like, of course, the IBM is always one of the better conventions and larger conventions, and also books such great talent. Who are some of the people that you've got booked here for this year?
Well, I'll give you a few. We have Nick DeFont, who is fresh off of his engagement with Cirque du Soleil. He was the ringmaster for Mad Apple. We have from Paris, France, our friend Alexandra Devivier.
Awesome.
She very rarely appears at convictions in America.
Right.
This is going to be really special. We have Eric Tate, who is fresh off of his FISM win, the last FISM in close-up. Jade, who hasn't done the IBM convention in a decade, long time. But the first woman to ever win the gold medal of magic. Andrei Shanishka from Prague. He's been on Pinto 5 times, 4 of them 3. Rachel Wax, who was just on Genie Magazine and from New York, and Speakeasy Magic.
Well, when you mentioned Alexandra Devivier, she fooled Penn and Teller too, as I recall.
Yes, she did. The first woman from Paris from France to do so.
Yeah.
So it's going to be an amazing
convention. And who was the other one? I just cut you off. You started to say another lady who was coming?
I said Rachel Wax is coming. Who else? Joshua Masano is going to be hosting our close-up show. He's famous for his rings, you know, the little small rings, solid rings.
Ninja rings.
He's going to be doing that. David Kovac, who was just nominated for Parlor Magician of the Year, will be with us too. So we have a lot of great talent, and that's just a little bit of it.
Sounds like that it's not just across the United States, but I mean, the fact this is all the way up in the Northwest, you brought people not just from across the U.S., but then also from all over the world in for this. So it sounds exciting. Yes. And I understand Michael Marr is going to be the guest of honor.
Michael will be the guest of honor, and it's going to be wonderful. You know, the first day he's going to do a one-man show. Mm-hmm. He's going to do 45 minutes of his famous magic, followed by a 15-minute Q&A. And then later in the week, he's going to come and do a lecture on the magic you'll see in the show. So you'll see how it works, be amazed by it, and then he'll give you some insight into how he puts together his magic.
Well, to kind of wrap up here, then also, how many lectures will there be?
There's a lecture every day, and on some days, two. So there's like 5 or 6 lectures.
Quite a few.
All different types of magic. You'll learn a lot. You'll learn a lot.
I think it's awfully important. Well, I know that you have selected some of the best who will be coming in. So great job on that, Benjamin.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
So for people who might be wanting to register, what's the website where they go?
It's magician.org. And the dates are July 10th through the 13th, and you can register right through the site.
Right, there you go. So check it out, magician.org, July 10th through the 13th. Thanks, Benjamin.
You bet. Thank you.
See you in Tacoma. And now back to our conversation with Giovanni.
And I, getting to the speaking side, right? Mm-hmm. All of these things were happening in the stands. I just won the Gold Cups, and a story came out in the paper. Mm-hmm. And I got a call from the president of the Chamber of Commerce. He says, Gio, we want you to be our luncheon speaker. I said, oh, okay, great. We'll do some magic. We'll have some fun. He goes, no. He goes, I'm not asking you to do a magic show, Gio. He says, you love what you do. Mm-hmm. You're an American entrepreneur. You're inventing a market where there was none. You're at the top of your field. You know, you're being recognized by your peers. He says, Gio, you have a message. And I was like, oh, okay.
And people might like to hear this.
Yeah. They might like to hear it, you know. And so I did my first speech. Okay. It was called Be Amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Was the first speech. And it has evolved. I still do it. Okay.
Isn't that what the cigar book was? That was called The Amazing Cigar?
The Amazing Cigar. That came out in 97. That's a different thing.
Okay? Oh, I know it is. But I mean, you use the word amazing. It sounds like a lot.
The word amazing a lot. Mm-hmm. Okay. Things have evolved. Amazing Dad was another one.
That was another one.
Yeah. But so I did my first speech. And I booked two more. Two banks booked me. And then I got two more. And then all of a sudden, the percentages of my shows shifted, where I was doing more banquet shows and, you know, close-up magic. And then now all of a sudden I was speaking. And then, you know what? It was natural for me. Natural for my energy.
Yeah, sure.
And natural for where I come from. You know, I got a big heart. And And I really want to, you know, help people if I can, right? And I had a, well, being a magician, it's interesting to people, right?
Sure.
We're already motivational, right? Without doing anything. They say, what? You do magic for a living? No way.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden, it's already inspiring. It's like, they're thinking, man, did I sell out? Did I? Yeah, not me, you know, themselves.
On their dreams,
they're thinking,
right.
But yeah, sure. They're thinking, man, maybe I should have
stuck with it,
yeah,
whatever that was. Yeah.
So it's, you know, where people who follow their passion path in any...
So is that what you talk about a lot of times?
Well, I mean, I do talk about finding your talent and passion collide.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Finding it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll do it, my little it poem for you, if you'd like.
I'd love that. Yes.
Okay. So there's a word in the English language that we use when we find somebody who is so talented at what they do, we have a loss of words. We just say they have it. We don't know what it is.
What else to say?
We just know it's something.
Right.
We don't know what it is. So but after living in this, I made some discoveries. I wrote this little thing here. It. You can't beg for it. You can't borrow it. You can't steal it. If you have it, you know you have it. If you don't have it, look for it. If you have talent for it, well, you may have it. If you have passion for it, you may have it. If you have talent and passion for it, you've got it. Everyone has an it. Find it, cherish it, grow it, share it. That's it. That's it. And so the message is, find where your talent and passion collide.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in that zone that you find it. Now, some people have talent, but they have little passion. And some people have passion, but they have little talent.
That's a good point.
If we have the balance of those, then it's great. Now, many of us, we found it a long while ago, okay? And we've been working on it. But then our fun meter goes down. Okay. And you start getting this thinking, maybe I should change professions. Maybe, you know, anytime your fun meter goes down and you've been working on your passion, it's not an indication to change professions. It's an indication to plus your talent. Plus your talent.
Plus your talent.
That's right. So if you find your fun meter going down in the art of magic, you need a new challenge, man.
And so
kick
like
it out.
Doing some new trick, going a different direction by using magic or?
Okay, all of the above. Right. Okay. You know, there's many ways, you know,
You could get tired of close-ups and now go do doves or something.
No, or
whatever that is.
You could try a new area, Matt, or just, listen, you can't outgrow this art.
Oh, that's for sure.
Okay, so you could stay right where you are and close-up magic and just, you know, take it to another level. Okay.
True.
You got to get excited about this again. And you... going to all the magic conventions you can, you're immersing yourself with other people who are passionate about this, you know,
and that keeps me passionate because yes, right. You fly with people, fly with those eagles.
Yeah.
So this way that you keep your passion, you keep that excitement going.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. So I have stayed on it, Scott, for over 50 years now.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So I'm 58 now. And
you had to have been discouraged at some point. And whenever you do you find that new plus or?
Oh my God. You cannot go through this life's journey without, you know, it's the hero's journey. You're going to be down in the dumps and there's going to be all kinds of challenges, you know, life and business and otherwise.
Right.
You know, but the through line of being a wonder maker has seen me through.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, and do you then use these as stepping stones to new ideas once you're talking about something and somebody comes to you and say, I really enjoyed that and it was inspirational, but starts talking to you about another idea that might be a springboard to something saying, well, I might start working on another topic. Because I know you have more than just one speech because you go back to some of these same businesses and you don't necessarily say the same thing over and over.
Right. Oh, well, speakers are experts who speak.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you become an expert in a particular area. Okay, now you have something to say. You don't just say, okay, I'm going to get into speaking. Okay, what are you going to talk about? You have to have some kind of expertise in it, you know. Okay, so we have an expertise in amazing people. Maybe that can be translated in a way, okay? Mm-hmm. For me, I've spoken about everything about conquering the impossible. the customer experience. Okay. I've become an expert in that and recognized by the guys who wrote the book, The Experience Economy.
Yeah.
And, I've come up with some storytelling techniques that help companies. I talk about the abundant life. Okay. Living a life that's most alive.
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like I'm doing that. Yeah. I try to do that.
Isn't that the way to do it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I wrote the book Live 1,000 Years, and the point is, if you could live 12 times the meaningful moments that the average person lives, then by your 84th birthday, you'll be 1,008 years old in moments and experiences. Mm-hmm. You know, Scott, we've lived amazing and enriched lives. I mean, it would take the average person would have to live to 700 years old to have the kind of experiences that we've had. You know, it's been unbelievable, you know. So live 1,000 years is my silly way to say, you know, live a life that's most alive, you know.
Right. Most experiences you can grab onto. Yeah. Grab that gusto.
Yeah, purposeful. You know, purposeful. You know, even the challenges that happen. Let's not waste a good failure. You know, let's learn from it, you know, get to the next level, you know, keep moving.
Do you incorporate magic to begin with, like to kind of hook your audience, or do you use it as a through line in your talks? Or?
Magic is in everything that I do. Okay. It's laced in all my writings, all of my creations. I could not have done if I wasn't a magician,
mm-hmm.
right? So you'd be silly not to utilize the art of amazement. But I mean, in the beginning when I was doing motivation, maybe I used magic more as a crutch,
okay.
as the messages were developing and fine tuning, but less and less magic and more content, and there becomes a balance,
right?
You know, between the two,
right?
And there's never any magic that is not purposeful,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a motivational program. Like everything is pointing toward the message,
and a lot of times I have seen speakers use magic. It's been, I think, pedantic from the standpoint of like, okay, I'm doing a professor's nightmare or Bill and Lemon or something that is, I say, pedestrian kind of magic. It's good. Might even use linking rings or something. And it makes the point, and they drive that point home. It's like in trade shows of saying, okay, well, this will represent this or that. And I don't particularly like to use rings saying this will represent quality and this represents service. Or, you know,
sure. Metaphorical.
I don't like to use that because people don't take that home. I want them to have something. If you're going to borrow a ring, a wedding band or something, is more meaningful, obviously. And so I would think that speaking would be similar to trade shows. And you've done a lot of trade shows.
Well, okay. Trade shows... That's a very, very good point. All right. I did 18 years of trade shows.
I remember.
And I loved it.
That's my favorite.
I absolutely loved it until I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, really? You had that.
And there was a moment.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a moment because, you know, it matched my energy, right? Yeah. I could
go for 8 hours.
To sell.
Yeah.
Right. So, you want to sell Texas Instruments or sell IBM? No problem. Let's go.
Yeah.
You know, and I had the right kind of energy to work the trade show and the stamina. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to do, you know, you go to these trade shows and it's their biggest industry, you know, of the year, you know, show. Okay. And they're living it up. They're doing 3 days of shows. They're doing these steakhouse dinners, drinking
right.
like fish, partying because it's their one big convention each year.
A year, right.
Okay. And they forget, I'm going to the next one after this.
That's right. You got next week,
got
the same thing again.
That.
Yeah.
And I got 9 trade show day perform, you know.
You got to maintain that energy.
Home,
yeah.
Three different clients. And boy, you really got to pace yourself, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it was a natural for me, my energy, a natural for my stamina. And I was very seamlessly, I can spend an hour talking to a leader in a company, not even. I know the precise questions to ask, and I can do a performance. And people will say, geez, how long have you worked for Texas Instruments? Or how long have you worked for HP? Or
yeah, I love those questions.
Yeah.
Well, it's about, you look at your watch and it's about 3 hours.
But, you know, delivering corporate messages was really, really good because at a certain point, I became so proficient at this. Then it was like, hey, what's my message?
Mm-hmm.
right? So trade shows was a fertile ground for me to learn how to use our art to deliver a message.
Yeah.
And, you know, now it's like, well, what's my message, you know?
Uh-huh. That's an interesting way of putting it. There is a transition there in which that, yeah, you do the research for a company to find out what it is. What I do is I look at their website and see what's on the splash page, because that's the information that the company wants people to know in a nutshell. Mm. And that's what you're trying to deliver real quickly. When someone's walking by, you want them to grab that stuff and to speak intelligently enough to think that you know more than just the headline title, you know, other thing. And likewise, yeah, moving into speaking that of saying, now I want to talk about me. So what are my headlines? What's on my splash page? Mm-hmm. And what's important that people might want to learn that I know?
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And one key question is how do you want the audience to be different?
Once they hear your
on the
your,
other your, side your of talk? My program.
Yeah.
How do you want them to leave the room? What do you... Mm-hmm. What are they going to be able to do that they weren't able to do before?
Yeah.
What are they going to believe that they didn't believe before?
Mm-hmm.
Right. How will they be transformed?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we can go above and beyond amusement and astonishment. Astonishment, I thought, was the end all. But really, for me, it's a bridge. Astonishment is the bridge.
So it's changed.
Transformation.
From what you used to.
Transformation is the goal.
Huh.
The audience could actually be different on the other side of the experience. So I've been pushing the limits of that.
Hmm. How would you go about that? I mean, do you build so that at the end there is no way except to say, I guess I do need to be thinking this way?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, to be inspiring, you know, to awaken that seed of desire in people to dispel their doubt about themselves so that they can proceed.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do I do that? Well, that's my secret sauce.
Yes. You know? We're not going to talk about your grandma's tomato sauce. Not going to talk about your secret sauce.
You're going to get my secrets before you get the damn secrets of my tomato sauce, all right?
Okay. well, I like that. If someone is thinking about getting into speaking, again, you have to have something to say.
Yeah.
And I have thought about that for a long time, but and I think I do have something to say, and I have been working on a book, and without telling everybody what it is, because they might think, well, that's a good idea. I'll pursue that too.
Uh-huh.
Because I like to start doing this first. But it was interesting that people came to you rather than you going out and seeking speeches and talks.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? Man, what am I thankful. Because there's certainly
at the right place at the right time, it sounds like, you know.
You know, and it's a natural for me, Scott.
It is.
It's a natural, yeah. Right? It's perfect, you know, my Italian, American gregariousness and where I come from and what I know and what I'm interested in and my kind of energy, okay? It became a natural.
Yeah.
And it's in from my heart. You know, I love what we do and I love the opportunity and I love life, you know? And
well, so, it's apparent too. Yeah. And you want the audience to be able to see that and know that you're not faking genuine.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Faking the genuine. Yeah. People can't have a real Christmas without their fake Christmas trees sometimes, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny. We were just talking about, Paul Gertner. I got the chance to see him.
Yeah, he was
while
here
in town, and
right.
It was just so nice to see Paul, smiling face, and we were. He was saying, "Geez, Gio, you know, there's all of these magic venues opening up around the country, like back in the day when the comedy clubs were in their heyday. It looks like magic's having a heyday.
I think we're in a new golden age."
And he was concerned. Maybe we're getting too many. Maybe it'll fade out. And I said, absolutely not, Paul.
I don't think so.
It's just going to grow.
Yeah.
Okay. It's going to get bigger. And because we're the original fakers. Okay. Hmm. What I mean by that is we're the authentic special effect. Right now, there's not a picture you look at that hasn't been doctored. There's not a special effect. I mean, we look at YouTube. We look at TV.
Sure.
We're bombarded.
Yeah. Reality
with,
TV.
With constant magic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this product is morphing into this and that's happening here and this vanishes and appears here and we become numb to it.
Correct.
But when I'm in front of a magician and I'm watching the the fakery and the special effects that are happening for real.
Yeah.
Right here in front. You know, we're the original fakery. Right? We're the original special effect.
Yeah.
And that is a rarity today. People are gonna see us and go, what? This is right here. It's not on a screen, you know?
That's right. That's right.
And so I think it's just going to grow.
And we're starting to give those people those kinds of experiences that you're talking about living 1,000 years, because they will remember they were there and they saw this happen, as opposed to, as you say, on television or wherever else, or TikTok or whatnot. But if you're going to be seeing something happen right under their nose, they are having an experience 100%. That lasts a lifetime.
It can, hopefully.
Yeah, well, it can if you're doing your job right.
Yeah.
It'd be something that is not just trivial. I think that we need to make something that's going to be important rather than just doing an unrelated trick after another. If you can make this meaningful to somebody, then I think that they will certainly retain that memory longer and appreciate it more deeply. That's, I think, goes to deeper fooling. I think it was David Riegel's book or something, just about that's the importance of, of not just saying, look at the pretty box, but what can the box do? But like, for an example, Eric DeCamps has got a great routine with the Dean's box. And Dean's box is kind of a mystery box. It's really cool. But he talks about it being he talks about the Davenport brothers and how they were inside of a box and they'd be tied up or something. And then he talks about history. And so history comes alive and you can kind of see how these things are happening. And, perhaps the wood may have been made from the cabinet or whatever. I mean, you can tell whatever story you want, but it becomes meaningful rather than just, that is a pretty box,
Yeah. In the experience economy, they have what's called the 4E model. Okay. It's a grid, right? It's a 4x4. And in one corner, you have entertainment. Another corner, you have education. Mm-hmm. Another corner, you have escapism to take them to another place. Mm. And the last one is aesthetic. Aesthetic with the E, not the A.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Meaning how do you make them feel? And so it's used as to gauge an experience. And you say, is it more educational or is it more entertainment? And on that scale, maybe you hit the sweet spot in the line in the center.
Right.
Or is it, how does it make me feel? And do I feel like I'm in another place? If I hit the sweet spot between all four of those, that's where transformation takes place. The 4E model. That's from the Experience Economy by Joe Pyne and Jim Gilmore, the 4Es.
So now that you mentioned that, is that something that you have studied before that you started going out to speaking, as far as going and seeing what other speakers have done before you to make sure you're not necessarily paving the same road again, or perhaps giving you also some experiences and knowledge of what people have done to maybe incorporate this? I mean, you got to be, as a teacher, which is what you are basically as a speaker, you have to be smarter than the smartest student in the room.
You have to know your stuff.
Know your stuff.
They say know your stuff. Know who you're stuffing and know when they're stuffed.
Boy, do I love that quote. And that is a good quality for a good salesman, when to shut up. Let them make the decision. You can push them as long as we want, but then know when they're stuffed, and it's like, okay, you got all the information you need. Interesting. So again, I guess you've got different books and people you have studied. Then it has been it's been a passion, I guess, to go back and understand these.
I've always loved human achievement and love business and marketing. Yeah. Okay, and the experience economy, those fellas, they cited me as an example, right? They use a lot of showbiz language in that. Okay, staging experiences. Okay, right. They use a lot of the storytelling language. And I was used as an example. They would have me do my performance and they would debrief it for an audience and say,
interesting.
Geez, was that entertainment? Did Gio take you to another place?
Yeah.
Well, how do you feel, right? Was that entertainment or education? How many learned something here, right? Mm-hmm. And they'd be like, wow, we couldn't decide. Was that entertainment? Was that education? Was that, were we in another place? What was going on here? They would use me as an example, and my materials, things that I've invented, to say, hey, look at this. Where's this at? So I became an expert in their field, and I utilized that to do, I just redesigned a headquarters for a company in Tampa. And I used all of my methods of the experience economy and all of methods of storytelling and creativity to express the values of the company in an immersive experience.
Yeah.
It's very theatrical. And it's another way that we could use our skills, okay, to help people, right? So I you know, studying architecture, right, studying human achievement, and studying amazement. You put all that together in a little salad bar. Yeah. And you got some skills. You
That's
know.
Right. But serve it up properly to the group that you're going to be talking to.
Yeah, help them well. Transform. I'm helping them transform. They want to transform the people who come into the spaces, right?
Yeah. Do you try to use a lot of emotion? I'm just thinking about Doc Eason. I remember seeing a talk that he did one time before a group, and he had people laughing with tears, and he also had them crying with tears with some sadness. I mean, he kind of went the whole gamut of different emotions.
Right. Isn't that a great movie?
It's a
when you watch a movie and you laugh, you cry, you get angry, you know, you get elated
exactly.
And that's human emotion. And it's really important. You know, I'm a high energy performer, and people who know my work, they know my natural energy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But with that and my motivational speech, it's a lot of texture. Right. Mm-hmm. There's spots where I'm sitting on the stage just having a fireside chat.
Yeah.
Okay. Then there's another spot where I'm standing on a chair yelling. Uh-huh. You know, bringing out that, you know, that bold Italian, you know, madness. So that's a lot of texture, you know, really low and really high and everywhere in between.
Right.
Okay. So you want to give the audience a roller coaster ride, you know, think of yourself, you know, we've talked a lot about empathy in recent years in our work, which is getting into the audience's shoes. Man, I cry for our audiences, okay? Mm-hmm. I cry for them. Because I think about being in an audience and watching bad magic, I just don't want to do it, you know? I just don't want to do it. You know, I don't want any audience I care about them.
Yes.
You know, I want them to do well. I want to do the best job that I can. Mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, real important. And, you know, to really care from your heart, you know.
For each individual person as well. It's not just, you know, looking at the, it's like when you scan an audience, you know, with your on stage, if you're scanning it, they get the feeling you're not looking at them. That's why you need to be looking at someone as you're talking. Same thing, I think, with a speaker, that they have to feel as if, hey, he's talking to me, you know, not just talking to us.
Yeah.
You know.
I have a little ritual. Do you know, and I train guys and talk to them and say, hey, you know, when you walk into this Marriott ballroom, it no longer belongs to the Marriott. This is now your room, okay? And I go around and I touch each of the chairs, okay? I like that because I like to think, somebody's going to sit in that chair and I have a responsibility to that person. And I kind of draw a thread. You know, when you touch somebody, when you shake their hand, it's like drawing a little thread from you to them.
Sure, okay.
Right? And in a way, when I go around the audience and I touch the chairs and I look, I'm thinking about these people. I'm thinking, you know, and you don't know. Somebody in that audience is going through some pain. Somebody in that audience has had something terrible happen.
Yeah.
Somebody's got an opportunity. Somebody's wondering what to do. And you don't know. So I go around the audience and I think about them. You know, you get your preset done, okay?
Yeah.
You get all your logistics, but there's an audience that's going to be there, and they're real people who have real problems and living a real life. And we can't forget that. We just do our shows. Sometimes we go through the motions. But one of my exercises is to go into the audience, and I touch those chairs.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of warm. In a way, I'm kind of warming that chair up for them. Get ready.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm getting myself ready, you know, to think I'm talking to human beings out here.
Do you get a lot of feedback afterwards? I mean, do you have like a sheet that people fill out, or are you just going hang out in the bathroom and listen to what people are saying, and like in the stall, or do you actually shake hands as people are leaving, or they make comments, or in other words, do you go and seek out comments or results?
Well, afterwards, people just want to talk to you.
They want to be with you.
Yeah, they want to talk to you. You know, and it's always nice to stay. You know, give your client the time of day, and if I can, the longer I could stay, the more effect. Right? People just want to have a little chat with you. Sometimes you can even bump them in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Right? You just give them a little positive bump, and now they're all moving in the right
trajectory.
That's
a good point.
Okay. And oh, by the way, you know, I don't need to tell any pro this. But you know that when you stay a little after, that's where the next show's coming from.
That's right.
You know, you're having a little scotch with your client afterwards, hanging out. You know what? We got this other thing going on, you know.
Oh, you do. That's right.
No kidding.
That's right. Yeah. You I always give more and charge less, you know, but I probably should be, well, shouldn't be that way around.
But yeah, I always hear, you know, from the audience says, Gio, you changed my life. Change it back. Change it back. You can't unhear it. Yeah. Anyway.
That's true. It's been great. Gio, thanks very much. I appreciate the words of advice and everything. It's good catching up.
Oh, what a joy, Scott. You're
so long.
You're a wonderful spirit. I appreciate everything that you do for the Art of Magic. Hey, and congratulations on that fellowship.
Thank you very much.
This last week, Scott was honored by the Academy of Magical Arts with the fellowship in magic, and that's could not be more deserving, Scott.
Why, thank
you. You're a beautiful man, and we appreciate everything that you do, and thank you for lifting our art.
I appreciate that. I'm glad that you recognize that, and so does the Academy and all the
right
listeners.
Here, we're looking out the window at the beautiful magic castle, and congratulations to you, and what a joy to be with all of you today.
Thank you. And what my podcast is called is The Magic Word, so I always close this with asking, what is it that your phrase or your philosophy, what's important in your life? It's not a word. It could be, again, a whole sentence or whatever. How do you?
Well, I could give you a magic word.
Oh,
I'll give you a magic word. Listen, doubt is the devil, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you want to do something, business, life, and we get those little chattering monkeys in our head, oh, I don't know, should I call them? Oh, I don't know, should I do it? Okay. And I created a magic word to dispel all doubt. If you know something's good for you and you want to proceed, so here's the magic word. I'm going to share this with everybody, Scott. Okay. So here it is. It's FIDIA. FIDIA. Frick it. Do it anyway. FIDIA. Frick it. Do it anyway.
Kill me. Love it. Gio, thanks very much. You're the best. I don't know why we haven't been together more often, but we need to make sure we don't let this time lapse again until the next time. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Giovanni Lavera. Gio, Scotty out.
Thank you very much, Gio. That was a lot of fun. Boy, I enjoyed catching up with you. I wish we lived closer and got to see each other more often. It's so much fun to chat with you, and you do live larger than life. You are quite an individual, and you share that joy with others in your speaking, I know, on a regular basis. And I certainly love your words of wisdom there of FIDIA. Freak it and do it anyway. That's kind of what we talk about here a lot on the Magic Word Podcast, and that is just the word is yes. Whatever the question might be, just do it. Just say yes. Move forward. Go on to the next thing. You don't have to think about it and necessarily say no. You're missing a lot of opportunities if you just don't do something. You need to move forward and just do it. Just say yes. That's kind of what I always say. Well, again, I want to thank our sponsor. That is the International Brotherhood of Magicians. And also, I want to encourage everybody to go to IBMconvention.com, where you can get more information on registering and also getting your hotel, et cetera, for the Tacoma Convention. That's going to be Tacoma, Washington, in July the 10th through the 13th. And it sounds like it's going to have just a great lineup and a lot of fun. I unfortunately will not be making it. I believe I said here that I'll see you in Tacoma, but I've got some conflicts. I'm not going to be able to make it to the convention here this year. So I will not be giving my daily reports from that convention. So sorry, I'll miss it. I also want to remind everybody, if you do use Amazon, and I know everybody does, if you remember to go to themagicwordpodcast.com, on every page of the podcast, you can, towards the bottom, you can click on this little banner that takes you to Amazon, and therefore anything that you purchase through Amazon, we get a little bit back of some of your purchase towards the affiliate program that we belong to with Amazon. So every little bit helps, certainly, and if you can help us in a bigger way, we would appreciate your financial support by becoming a friend of the Magic Word and becoming a patron by either pledging monthly, or you can give a donation from time to time using Patreon or PayPal. Also, as a reminder, don't forget to subscribe to the Pod Letter. If you don't, you might be missing out on some opportunities to find out about our upcoming contests whenever that we have them from time to time. There's nothing we've got going on actually right now, but I still think that you should subscribe because it tells you who's going to be on from week to week. Well, speaking of next week, I think it's about time to wrap up this week's, and we're going to be having another great conversation with another great magician next week. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember, Fidea. This is Scotty out.